Let's welcome our guest, though, the Reserve Bank Governor, Adrian Orr. The central bank has signalled a sustained period of interest rate rises in a bid to rein in rising inflation. Yesterday, it raised the official cash rate, which influences retail bank lending rates by a quarter of a percentage point to 0.75%, citing strongly rising prices, a hot housing market and a tight labour market. The RBNZ's Monetary Policy Committee acknowledged the current outbreak of COVID and the dampening effect of lockdowns on the economy, but said it was worried inflation, which it forecast would head towards 6% a year, would get entrenched. The September quarter inflation rate hit 4.9%, much higher than forecast and beyond the Reserve Bank's target range of 1% to 3%. The bank is signalling a sustained period of rises to the OCR. It comes as the world central banks grapple with the question of whether current inflationary pressures are transitory or, and related to the pandemic, or becoming entrenched. The Governor, Adrian Orr, is with us now. Kia ora and welcome, Governor.
Kia ora, Catherine, and thanks for that great introduction, a great summary.
The latest decision, 25 basis points, did you consider a sharper shock rise of half a percentage point?
Yes, we always consider a range of options, of waiting, of doing what we did or doing more sooner. And so, you know, it's always best foot forward on balance with the known uncertainties that are in front of us.
What can you say about the trajectory of the cash rate from here on in?
Yeah, so our best foot forward is to say we believe we need to continue removing the monetary stimulus, reducing it. We see a neutral rate of the official cash rate at around 2% compared to the 0.75 where it is. And we are projecting it to go up north of that to around 2.5%. by the end of next year, and that's in slow, steady steps. The good news, which is also the bad news, we get to review this, every 6 weeks or so to see whether we're still on the right path and if we are going fast enough.
What are the key sources of inflationary pressure in this time frame?
Yeah, for us, the things that worry us over the medium term, I mean, you've already mentioned near-term inflation is already outside, north of our target range. It's the medium-term generalised inflation pressures that we have to be wary of. We can't do anything about international cost pressures. They just arrive, they're in the tin. We have to weather them, all the folks of Aotearoa, New Zealand. But the medium-term ones are really around what I would call, capacity pressures. The economy, even though we're seeing really tough situations for some businesses, on aggregate, the economy has been running above its potential growth rate or above its potential level. And by that, I mean that supply shortages, labour shortages, skill shortages, capital shortages are always and everywhere when we measure them. There's not a single survey index or business or actual outcome that says the economy, all of them point to the economy running hotter than is capable without generating generalised inflation. So, our task is to start lowering the level of in the punch bowl and calling the inflation expectations.
Which of these are still pandemic related and which of these are becoming entrenched? You've mentioned some of it. The GDP result was higher than many anticipated in the circumstances. You've mentioned the labour shortages bringing wage pressures. There is, of course, the question of cheap money itself. Which of these do you see as still likely to ease off post-pandemic and which are becoming entrenched?
Yeah, great question. And probably the easiest way to approach it is the good old-fashioned demand and supply. On the demand side, we've got a very strong fiscal response that was in part necessary because of this pandemic challenge. As you say, we've got low interest rates, which we're addressing, again, in large part sponsored by the COVID challenge. But on the supply, and actually that means that household and business balance sheets are actually in very good stead on average, and people are spending. So, you've seen a very strong level of spending. It's not on services, but it's mostly on goods, whether you're in lockdown and you're ordering things or whether you're out enjoying some domestic tourism, so on. On the supply side, that has been the real surprise for all policymakers globally. the contraction in the ability to produce goods and services because of the COVID disruptions has been significant. So while demand has been managed to be maintained through these policies, supply has been severely disrupted. So when you think about it, the potential capacity of the economy to produce goods and services has been constrained at a time when demand has remained strong, and hence we are seeing these inflation, the generalized inflation pressures growing.
With the benefit of hindsight, in one of the most unpredictable, if not the most unpredictable, situations a governor and a board has seen in some time, did you underestimate some of this? Did the quantitative easing go on a bit too long? And might a move or a signal on the OCR have come a little earlier?
The thing that I would say globally, policymakers have learnt, and on a very positive sense, is the ability and willingness of governments to use their fiscal power to spend and transfer money, to use that rapidly and broadly on high trust models. So, I haven't seen a business cycle before or an economic shock where it has been primarily the government fiscal policy rather than the traditional central bank response that has been so large and so powerful. So that is a wonderful thing. With monetary policy, central banks have still had, so to answer the question, I have no regrets at all. We have done what has been necessary. We have maximum sustainable employment. We have and maintained low inflation expectations. The credibility of central banks remains where it is. But without doubt, given the ongoing fiscal spending, given the health of the balance sheets that I've talked about, it's time for us as the Reserve Bank to be removing our stimulus through time. The quantitative easing, that's a sideshow. I know it was exciting, it was big, it was just an additional tool to get interest rates lower. The actual ongoing impact of the quantitative, our bond holdings in that program are very minimal on overall interest rates. That is the official cash rate that we're back fully in the seat using.
How do you undo that quantitative easing, by the way? And just to remind people, and you, I'll have a go, and then you help me out. Basically, what happens is you create money as the Reserve Bank to buy government debt in the form of government bonds. They are then part of the bond market. You do it directly, so that helps keep a lid on prices rather than going to the market. The question is, what do you do with that portfolio now? It's over $50 billion, I think. What happens in reverse?
Yeah, so I'll give you a 7 out of 10 there, Catherine, which is
More than
far
enough
higher
for high
than
school economics.
I was going to say. That's incredibly high. So thank you very much. And the reason you didn't get 10 out of 10 was simply that we don't buy the bonds directly from government at all. We buy them in the secondary market like anyone else does. So the government decides how much they want to spend fiscally, how much they need to raise debt to help them do that spending. And people buy that debt off the government, and we were one of the people buying that debt. So what it means is that there's a big buyer always in the market called the central bank, and it means that the interest rates or the cost of issuing that debt would be lower than otherwise. So it lowers the level of interest rates in the economy. It also means, as you said, we are now the proud owner of a stock of government debt. Sitting in our balance sheet. It's an asset because the government owes us the money. It's the asset. And what we need to do now is to say, how much do we need to retain? How much do we need to manage down that size of the asset that we hold? We want to manage it down when it most suits our monetary policy. We don't want it to be working counter to the direction of overall monetary conditions. So managing it down is consistent with that. But we also want to manage it down in a way that retains financial stability, particularly confidence in New Zealand government bond market. And so how do we do that? The answer is carefully. We take our time We're going to come out in February with our play sheet. Our play sheet will be as much around the principles and the goals we're after as opposed to the dates and times we are selling. Sorry, we are looking to manage down our bonds. I stop myself saying selling because that is not a signal. What we'll be looking at doing is thinking about how much do we reinvest? Do we reinvest? Do we, you know, how do we just manage the stock down over time? So it becomes just a portfolio management job, unrelated to our core monetary policy decisions.
So that document in February, aimed at the market, I imagine, will explain the principles of how you intend going about this.
Yes, yep. And, they're not too complicated at all. It's going to be around the effectiveness of what we're trying to achieve. It's going to be around the operational capacity, and it's going to be around making sure that we tiptoe carefully and don't unnecessarily have prices move from us.
Let's come back to the inflation question. Do you see other central banks now beginning to recognise the so-called transitory inflationary pressures might not be? I'm thinking particularly of the Federal Reserve in the United States, but also the big central banks of Europe. I have seen some former Reserve Bank governors being a little critical. Malcolm King is one I've got in mind, of how slow that appreciation has been, of what the inevitable impact of such a prolonged period of cheap money would be. Are others beginning to change tack too?
I would say across, so yes, absolutely. I mean, we're not alone. We're probably in the front end of the curve across central banks, along with a few others, where we have already stopped the quantitative easing and we have begun lifting the official cash rates. And so other central banks had different starting positions. Their economies weren't running as hot as ours were prior to the COVID. So they've had more spare capacity. They've had more time to watch, worry, and wait, observe. But without doubt, now across the board, the number one game in town is when and by how much. There's no discussion about direction. It's more about timing and need.
Do you still have concerns for businesses who may get caught in a crunch? They've got the challenges, as you say, of tight labour markets. They're still working with some COVID restrictions. They're now going to see rising costs of borrowing. You had been very mindful of the ongoing COVID impacts in the earlier decisions to keep cutting, or certainly not to start raising. Do you have concerns there are going to be people just crunched in the middle here?
Yeah, we have real concern. One of the challenges, the thing that keeps me awake at night is not the day job. It's just it's well, it is the day job. It's some of the things that we can't influence. And really, we have one instrument. We have one, remit for monetary policy, which is low and stable inflation and contributing to maximum sustainable employment. But out there, you have borrowers and lenders. You have exporters and importers. You have retail, wholesale. You have tourism. You have, such a broad plethora of businesses that it's not going to be the same for all. We're operating in the aggregate on average. The best thing we can do on that is not to pretend we can be precise and look after everyone. It's to focus on our core remit because it's inflation that does damage to everyone, whether you're in any one of those categories. So our task is to maintain low and stable inflation and take one worry off the table of businesses. And we've got very used to that over the last two decades. So it has been an incredibly successful role. We're also very cognizant of the ongoing health-related challenges. In fact, I think we're probably first out of the stall to say openly that, it's likely COVID-19 will be more widespread throughout geographically throughout the country. And that will lead to continuous business disruptions and uncertainty. It's just not a pleasant environment to be in. And that's in part why we are taking careful steps rather than just slavishly following the model. We're saying we can see it needs to be north. We need to take steps. This transition into the COVID protection framework will be really insightful to everyone over the next few months. Just how does it unfold and how do we behave? We've only got snippets of examples globally at the moment, and the answer is it goes okay. It's not that much fun.
Challenges of forecasting that quarter, September quarter figure of 4.9%. I was going back through old monetary policy statements, trying to get a sense of whether you had any or was signalling any expectation that things were heading that way. It certainly was significantly higher than analysts were expecting. Did it shock you, and does it also concern you about the challenges of forecasting in this environment?
I think the challenges of forecasting have, you know, lived there forever. You know, what is it, making predictions are difficult, especially about the future. The, you know, what we use our projections for is as much as a broad guideline and storytelling technique to enable people to understand what we're seeing and why we are acting as we are. I would never pin any, you know, reputational access on hitting those things. And the good news is we get to repeat it every 6 weeks. The broader one is we are in absolute extreme volatility at the moment in economic statistics. So these numbers that pop out, whether it's a measured CPI inflation or a dramatic fall followed by a dramatic rise in output, that is just a fact. So we have to keep looking to the medium term, looking through the noise and getting our best assessment of where we are through time. The most recent challenges, you know, Auckland and level four lockdown, Auckland, Northland, Waikato, you know, these areas, you know, that wasn't on the horizon in June or July. And so we just have to work with what we've got and over-communicate, be as clear as possible. On the big areas, I'm really pleased with where we've gone. You know, we've done what we've needed to do. We've got through with very low, a very high engagement in the labour market, very low unemployment. Inflation expectations remain anchored. Yes, there's lots of noise created by supply chain issues. But in general, our financial system is incredibly, incredibly robust.
Talk that will top 5% before things turn, as we said, well through your band. That first rise, I think, before yesterday's, that first 25 basis point or quarter percentage point rise, the review prior, was the first, I think, in 7 years. There's a whole generation coming through, many of them buying houses or trying to at the moment, who have little lived experience of inflation, but also some of them little lived experience of high interest rates. How concerned are you about the overextension? I heard you talking this morning with our business editor about banks having to have been doing their stress testing. But how concerned are you about any correction to come in the housing market in particular?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the answer is very concerned. And that is, why do I say very? Because, you know, asset pricing is incredibly important to how people behave around whether they want to invest, where they invest, whether they're feeling wealthy or not. And housing is the number one asset of choice in Aotearoa, New Zealand. So for us in aggregate, you know, we have to have a sense around what that is. The other part, you know, to have a sense around what's going to go on with consumption, spending, and hence inflation. The other important part is around the broader financial stability, and we need to make sure that banks are doing their jobs appropriately, that they have well-managed balance sheets, well-managed risks, and that they are providing a long-term appropriate service to their customers. So this is why we push very hard, not only on banks' governance and their capabilities, but also around what are they saying to their customers, how are they stress-testing their customers' ability not only to buy the house at the current interest rate, but to weather a vast range of interest rates through times over a long period of time. And that is, you know, that means there needs to be plenty of, you know, hinu between the current interest rate and what it could be in the future. Otherwise, you are buying yourself into problems. And the last part, I totally agree. You know, stretching yourself to be over-leveraged to buy a house when the central bank itself is saying house prices are unsustainable, in other words, they are beyond above any kind of broad economic fundamental, you really have to interview yourself hard as to what am I really looking to achieve and is this worth the investment challenge? Now, first home buyers, if you want to go and live, etc., a long time, that is great. You just understand that it's that you buy it and it's for a long time asset. But if you're in there thinking it always goes up and at some point I can sell it and make my money, well, think again. It's riskier than that.
You have said house prices are not sustainable, not just house price increases, rates thereof, but house prices. Does that mean
Yes.
they need to come down?
Judging, from the economic research that we've made very public, the work we do with Housing Urban Development, Treasury, lots of private sector firms, we can only explain a certain percentage of house prices. The rest of that is related to market momentum, excitement, fear of missing out, all of these, all of the traditional human drivers of asset prices. And we're saying, sustainable prices below the current level of actual prices. And so does it, one or two things could happen, or three things could happen. One, our analysis is wrong. So we put that to the side. The other two things is the fundamentals over time grow to meet the current house prices. That would mean an incredible growth in household income. Over a very short period of time, or house prices begin to adjust downward back towards a more sustainable level. We think it's more likely the latter, in part because housing supply is at record levels. Coming over the next 18 months is New Zealand's largest ever growth in housing supply.
How significantly might prices come down if that supply begins to meet demand?
Yeah, so our, again, just using very and very simple frameworks, I'd say frameworks rather than forecasts, we see house prices declining on average 5%, which is tiny relative. I mean, they went up 30% last year. But what we can't, as I mentioned before, just as we can't forecast the excitement on the upside, I don't know about forecasting the excitement on the downside either. All I'm saying is that the fundamentals move slowly and the actual price can be quite volatile around those fundamentals. At the moment, they're well above it.
You have had approved new tools to address house prices if need be. Can you tell us how you're implementing them currently and what else remains in the toolkit?
Yeah, thanks. Good question. So good that I'm just going to change it a little bit. Our tools are largely about managing debt. We don't target house prices. Everything we've talked about is the external implication of our monetary policy and how it impacts on house prices. We target inflation. The tools that you're talking about are ones where we can put limits on the ability to borrow. So in other words, limit banks on the amount of lending that they can provide as relative to, there's two forms. One is the total loan they can make relative to the value, how much of it can you borrow? And so, what deposit might you need? And that's about constraining extreme leverage. And the ones that we are currently looking to add to our toolkit, it's out there for consultation at the moment, are debt to income ratios, which is how much debt can you take on as a ratio of your income? And likewise, do we need to have a minimum floor on the interest rate? In other words, when a bank is stress testing a customer, do they have to have a certain level of interest rate they need to test against just to add that certainty? In a perfect world, we wouldn't have to be doing any of this. Borrowers would be fully rational, banks would be long-term and rational, and all of this would be a beautiful world. That's not how it works. People are short-term, banks are short-term in this type of lending, and so these constraints end up being necessary. They are globally available. We have reluctantly come to the party over recent years because of some of the debt excesses we have seen.
It is an important juncture, isn't it, for monetary policy in this country in recent times and possibly globally. There's been a reluctance, actually for decades internationally, to normalise interest rates. I'm thinking back to the time of the GFC in particular. Will it happen this time? Will central banks and or in some instances governments, who of course they're supposed to be independent from, accept that it may be time to normalise interest rates well beyond what's been seen for quite some time? Because that then gives you the room to cut interest rates when the next crisis comes.
Yes, I think that is the case. You know, again, that's assuming no, you know, whatever the next shock is. You want to take opportunities like this to, you know, monetary stimulus needs to be removed. You take these opportunities to put interest rates back to somewhere where they are more neutral. The global challenge at the moment, and particularly given decades of very low inflation, you know, central banks have been very successful. Likewise, we've had deflation pressures coming through from particularly from the opening up of China and the goods and services. What is the neutral interest rate now? So it is. It's not where I would have, you know, when I was cutting my teeth. You know, it's not the 5, 6, 7% neutral rate now. You know, we think the New Zealand neutral rate is only 2%. And so, you know, we'd be saying, well, if you're tight, you're somewhere north of 2. If you're loose, you're somewhere south of 2. So in nominal terms, that is still very low. But in real terms, because inflation's low, they will still bite.
Thank you for your time. Adrian Orr is the Reserve Bank Governor.